we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, January 20th, 2017. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined in the studio today by my co-host, Sinead Sanders, and our control room operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
It's been said that, especially in the current economy, we're all just one bad decision away from homelessness. For homeless folks with companion animals, accessing supplies and vet care can be a challenge. Our first interview today, coming up in about 10 minutes, will be with Kathy Powelson, founder and executive director of the BC charity Paws for Hope. She'll be telling us all about their Roxy's Relief program, which provides aid to homeless people to help them keep their companion animals safe and healthy. And our feature interview today will be with Javron Martel, Canada Outreach Coordinator for Vegan Outreach, a nonprofit organization working to end violence against animals. We're lucky to have her right here in the studio with us today. And we'll be getting to know her and finding out all about the activism tour that she's currently doing with Vegan Outreach. And that's coming up in just over half an hour, so stay tuned. But first, since we don't shy away from complex and delicate topics here at Animal Voices, we wanted to spend a few minutes tackling an issue that seems to be more and more relevant here in Vancouver, and that is vegan businesses and gentrification in our city's low-income areas. So, Sinead, you had some thoughts on this that you wanted to share?
This is something that I started thinking about this week initially because a local vegan bakery, which I love, I heard that some of their baked goods were going to be available at a new cafe in Chinatown. And so I thought, great, because that's closer to where I live. And I'd love to be able to go enjoy their stuff, you know. But so I looked up this cafe and there's this article and it started off by saying something like, are you ever walking down the street and you just wish that there was some place that you could get organic soy milk or almond milk on tap or something? And of course, they were saying it in a sort of a humorous way, but I was looking at the location of the place and it was really, it's a couple blocks from Main and Hastings. And frankly, there are, I think it's obvious that there are a lot of people in that neighborhood whose concerns, whose daily concerns are not lying with finding organic soy milk on tap.
Right.
For those who don't know, Main and Hastings is actually considered to be Canada's poorest postal code in the whole country. Yeah.
And not even for long, because there are a lot of well-off people who are moving into that neighborhood. And that is what gentrification, that's what gentrification involves.
Yeah, it's basically driving low-income people out of their neighborhoods, just by rising rent and rising cost of living. And unfortunately, when any sort of high-end businesses start to move into low-income areas, they do tend to drive up the cost of living and the cost of rent. And, you know, it's a complicated thing because in Vancouver, the rent is so high, you know, not only for residential, but also for businesses. So it's very difficult, I think, to start any sort of business in Vancouver. It's very difficult to afford the rent. So naturally, you know, people are going to be seeking out anyone who wants to open a business. They'll be seeking out places with the cheapest rent. And that does tend to be the downtown east side area.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it leaves you thinking as an activist or an advocate for any social justice, then you're wondering, you know, if veganism is, of course, very much a social justice issue. In spite of popular conceptions, it's not just a lifestyle choice. It is about justice for animals and combating oppression against animals. But as these businesses are opening that are more vegan friendly or vegan businesses entirely, then I think it's really, really important that we extend the same compassion and empathy to the people who are struggling in the streets around us, not just to animals. We can't invite people to these establishments and say, hey, have compassion for animals if we're ignoring the humans that are suffering right outside. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to be a part of that problem. So we were discussing earlier some ways that vegan businesses can potentially become more helpful and can open their eyes and actually help the people struggling in the streets around them that they're sharing this neighborhood with, you know, whether anybody likes it or not.
Yeah.
And there are ways that we can do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, to me, if a business of any kind moves into a community like that, I feel that they should definitely do whatever they can to give back to that community and to try to make, you know, to the fullest extent possible, just try to make at least some of their products or services accessible to people in that community. And just to kind of balance out this effect that tends to happen, right? Just gentrification and the driving up of costs. But yeah, we were talking earlier before the show about there was a cafe that actually just closed down recently, sadly, Heartwood Community Cafe, which before that it was Rhizome, which was very similar. They had a program where, it was basically just a regular cafe, you know, mid-price kind of dishes, really nice food, very vegan friendly. I think a lot of vegans went there often mm-hmm. because there was a lot of vegan food on the menu. And but they had a program where they had a pay-as-you-can lentil soup.
Soup for the people.
Yeah, soup for the people.
I just like the name for that because it's so inclusive.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was a daily thing. Every day they would make a big pot of lentil soup and you would go in and if you wanted to get a bowl, you just pay what you can. They encouraged people who were able to pay more to kind of offset, you know, anybody who maybe was not able to pay or only able to pay, you know, a few cents or whatever. But so basically, yeah, the idea was that anybody could come in and get a nice, hot, nutritious meal.
Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that I personally, and I think all of us here at Animal Voices would love to see more of down there, especially everywhere, because vegan food, if we are the social justice movement that we want to be, then we want to be promoting compassion for everybody, right? So
I think every business model needs to have that giving back component to it, even if they're mm-hmm. for profit.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like just because they're putting themselves out there into society, they're now part of the fabric of society, which involves a lot of these issues, right?
Yeah,
they need to give back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's especially true if they're setting up in a low-income community. But yeah, there are a few other examples, like, both locally and in other places. I remember just recently I read something about a mobile vegan soup kitchen. I'm not recalling now where it was, but somebody had set up kind of a food truck that was a mobile vegan soup kitchen, and they were serving soup to the homeless and people who are hungry, and Food Not Bombs typically serves mm-hmm. vegan food to homeless people, hungry people. It can, like, you can definitely incorporate those two things, you know, use vegan food to feed hungry people. And it doesn't have to be expensive, obviously, you know, making mm-hmm. veggie soup or lentil soup is one of the cheapest things you can make.
Yeah, and that's a conversation that we wind up having with people a lot, because there is a common misconception that vegan food has to be expensive and that it's this elite sort of thing. But as I say, it's a social justice issue. It's about fighting oppression against animals, and we need to make that accessible to as many people as possible, even people who are struggling in the streets, they need help too. We cannot just close our eyes to that. So,
right.
So,
And so, I know we're all so excited whenever a new vegan business opens up. I know I am, regardless of where it is. It's great to have more options and more food in the city. But I think that, as consumers, I guess, or, you know, as people who are benefiting from that, we can really kind of keep the pressure on these folks, you know, or just encourage them, maybe, you know, email, call, just encourage them to figure out programs to give back to the community and offer our help whenever possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are definitely options, and this is just, you know, this is just to start the start a conversation. I think it's a conversation that the animal rights advocates need to be having. And so maybe we can talk about this again on the show sometime a little bit more in depth and see more of this going on, get some stuff going on in the community. So this is very much to be continued,
yeah,
I would say.
Absolutely.
Tune in Thursday nights for Fruit Salad from 7 to 8 p.m.
Tune in to Fruit Salad.
Tune in Thursday nights for Fruit Salad.
Are those queer, trans, lesbi, gay people anyways? What is their agenda? Tune in to find out while they celebrate musicians, performers, organizations, families, writers, Pink World News, and much, much more. Fresh Fruit, every show.
Tune in Thursday nights for a show that's out of this world. Fruit Salad, 7 to 8 p.m.
All right, so we got a couple of events coming up tomorrow, Saturday, January the 21st. No more dead cetaceans. There will be a big demonstration at the Vancouver Aquarium to oppose the keeping and display of cetaceans in captivity and to urge the aquarium and their patrons to recognize the potential to be leaders in the use of sea pens and transitioned release. We still don't have any answers on the deaths of Aurora or Kila, the belugas who died a couple of months ago at the aquarium, and plans still stand to expand the facilities so they can bring in more cetaceans. So at this demo, there will be speakouts, leafleting, and discussions. Right now is a really crucial time to educate people on this issue. This event will be 12 noon to 3:30 p.m., again, Saturday, January 21st at the Vancouver Aquarium. This is also ahead of a park board meeting that will happen on Monday night. So, as I say, really important to keep the pressure on. We don't want any more whales or dolphins or porpoises to be imported into the city for entertainment. It's absurd. So you can find more information on this event on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And speaking of the park board event, that's Monday, January 23rd. It's a park board meeting, and people are gathering peacefully at this park board meeting to peacefully ask commissioners to bring forward options to end captivity. The Vancouver Board of Parks and Rec is at 2099 Beach Avenue. The event will run from 6:40 p.m. until 7:30 p.m. That's when activists are getting together. If you can't attend, please consider sending a quick email to the Parks Commissioners asking for a moratorium on the importation of more whales and dolphins to the Vancouver Aquarium. You can find more information online at facebook.com/Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. They're the ones who are hosting this event, and you can watch Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered online for free. It's a great, informative documentary. Really important. Watch it, share it with your friends. And finally, Wednesday, February the 1st, Animal Voices is presenting an exciting event. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, we're co-presenting.
With Liberate GV Zoo Animals. Is that right, Allison?
Mm-hmm. And Megan Beattie. She's a local activist. Mm-hmm. So she's really leading everything, and I'm helping her.
Right on. Well, so this event is Joanne MacArthur. Joanne MacArthur's coming to town. Joanne MacArthur, Stories of Love and Liberation. World-renowned animal activist and photographer Joanne MacArthur will be in town for a special presentation of her journey through Stories of Love and Liberation. Joanne has traveled the world as a presenter, undercover investigator, photographer, activist, and advocate. She was featured in the critically acclaimed documentary The Ghosts in Our Machine and has published two books of beautiful and haunting photos. And she's also the founder of the Unbound Project, which aims to recognize and celebrate women at the forefront of animal advocacy. So this event will be held at the SFU Harbor Center downtown at 515 West Hastings. Admission will be by donation, and all funds raised will be going to support Joanne's travel and work costs.
I believe it's room 1800, too. It's a really big building. So room 1800.
Yes, the Terracin Cinema on the main floor. There will be a Q&A session after the presentation, and again, that's Wednesday, February 1st, 7 p.m. at the SFU Harbor Center. And you can find more info on that on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
That'll be great. Yeah, Joanne's an amazing photographer, an amazing person, so not to be missed.
If you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like to have announced on the show, please contact us through email, radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or through our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. All right, so now our first interview today is with Kathy Powelson, Executive Director of Paws for Hope Animal Foundation, a Vancouver-based nonprofit which provides care, support, and education through programs and services, including financial support, to individuals and groups to enhance companion animal welfare in BC. Now, recent cold winter months have seen Paws for Hope offering assistance to some of Vancouver's most vulnerable residents, and that's companion animals and their guardians facing homelessness. She joins us here today to discuss this work applied through their Roxy's Relief Program and shed some light on some of the issues faced by animals and their guardians living on the streets. Hi, Kathy, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thank you very much.
So many people, when they see someone living on the street with a dog or cat, may ask themselves, why would that person take on the responsibility of an animal's life when they're already struggling to find resources to meet their own needs? But there are many reasons why someone might wind up homeless and in guardianship of an animal. So can you tell us, what kind of a role do companion animals play in the lives of people living on the streets?
Yes, absolutely. I think the first point that needs to be made, though, is that it's inaccurate to assume that people living on the street acquire the pet when they are homeless. We don't know for certain the number of people who've had a pet before they end up homeless and living on the streets. You know, with the housing crisis in particular, we are seeing more and more people being forced out of their housing from increased rental rates to rent evictions. And some of these people, they're forced to surrender their pets in order to find affordable housing. And some choose not to surrender their pets, and then they end up homeless or in precarious living situations. But for those that are homeless, that do acquire a pet, are homeless, you know, our experience has been that the primary reason they do so is for companionship. Many people living on the streets are very isolated. They have little to no social or family support systems, and a pet is what becomes their constant companion.
Mm-hmm. And it's been estimated that nearly half of the overall homeless population in Canada suffer from mental illness or physical disabilities. Can you tell us more about the value of animal companionship to these individuals in particular?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, pets are constant companions. They help to reduce feelings of loneliness and isolation. Pets have been attributed to reducing anxiety as well. I recall in the late 80s when HIV hit the scene, people living with HIV were told that they had to get rid of their cats because of a parasite that is commonly found in their feces, and that parasite is bad for people with compromised immune systems. What happened, though, is these people's health started to deteriorate, and they became increasingly more depressed. So health practitioners found ways to manage people with compromised immune systems, how they can live with cats. And, you know, simple things like wearing latex gloves and masks while changing the litter box. So we know from past experience, too, that the removal of someone's pet can actually exacerbate any health issues. And so we know that they provide benefits in terms of not just, you know, anxiety or depression, isolation, but there's been research that shows lower blood pressure, people with pets, particularly if they've got dogs, they're often more active, and so they get the benefits of being more active as well. And of course, people with assistance dogs, if with physical disabilities, assistant dogs can be very, very helpful. People that are homeless, they may not have access to the organizations that are providing these assistance dogs, though. And so I don't actually know really how someone homeless would be able to, or even if they would be able to access an assistance dog.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about that a little bit too. What kinds of resources are in place for animal guardians living on the streets in neighborhoods like the downtown east side? Do we have homeless shelters, for example, that accept people with companion animals?
Yeah, we're seeing shelters recognizing the importance that animals play in people's lives, and if forced to make a choice, they will sleep outside rather than to surrender the pets so they can stay in the shelter. So we are seeing more and more shelters making accommodations for people with pets. But we also know there still is a lot of work to be done. A research report that we funded the McCreary Center Society to put together showed that homeless street-involved youth with pets still faced a lot of barriers, such as housing and access to healthcare services. So there is definitely a movement towards making the attempt to accommodate people with pets, and there's a lot more work to be done. And so, you know, our hope is that the animal welfare community and the social services sector can start to work together to address these issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, so can you tell us more about what Paws for Hope then is doing to help support people and their companion animals living on the street in Vancouver? What is the Roxy's Relief Program, and how did it get started?
So our Roxy's Relief Program is a shelter intervention program, and it provides support to pet guardians who are homeless and or low income. We have various different services under this program. We provide, we do food delivery program in partnership with social service agencies in Vancouver, New Westminster, and North Vancouver. We operate free animal health clinics throughout the year in partnership with many social service agencies. And we'll be adding One Health clinics that partner with human healthcare providers and social workers, along with our volunteer health team, to support vulnerable and homeless populations. We also provide funding to help get sick pets to the veterinary to the vet for emergent treatment and care. And we offer no and low cost spay and neuter programs in partnership with hospitals and communities across the province. The program was started by a conversation that I had with one of our directors, Lori Mason, in the very early days of Paws for Hope. Lori had spent a few days in the downtown east side actually looking for her friend's dog, Roxy, that was stolen from her workplace. And there had been sightings of Roxy in the downtown east side. So they were down there looking for Roxy, and Lori was really struck by the number of people she saw that had pets, and she wanted to do something to help. So that's how we started. The good news is Roxy was found and returned, and we named the program in her honor.
Right on. So among all the people that you've met in the downtown east side or elsewhere, living on the streets or facing low-income situations, what would you say are some of the most common misconceptions about homeless folks with companion animals? What do they want us to know?
Well, I think the misconception is that these animals are mistreated, they're malnourished, and they're suffering. Dr. Llewellyn, who is our board president and head veterinarian, has spoke many times on how the vast majority of the animals coming to our free clinics are as healthy as the pets he sees in his private practice. In fact, most of the dogs we see are far more socialized, having less anxiety when they're handled by a vet, and are at much healthier weight than the dogs that he sees in his private practice. What we do see more of is fleas and parasites, but these are relatively easy to manage, and we provide free vaccinations and flea and parasite control at our clinics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had some friends myself who have spent time living on the streets or traveling, and their dogs, by far, they always say, you know, our dogs eat before we do.
They are feeding their animals before themselves. And typically, like with particularly with the dogs, because when dogs are living with someone who is homeless, they are often doing what dogs naturally do. They roam in packs, and they are more socialized because they are around more people, and they spend a great deal of the day walking around. They have access to much more exercise than typical house pets do nowadays. The other thing, too, I should mention is there are a lot of people living in SROs that have cats and small animals such as rats and rabbits. And because they don't see them, people don't tend to think that they're part of the support that we provide. So when people are donating food, we often get lots of dog food. But one of the things that we always need is cat food and cat litter, because there are a lot of people living in either shelters or SROs that have cats.
All right. So speaking of which, what can our listeners do to help support companion animals and their guardians facing homelessness?
Yeah, there are a few things that they can do. They can support us. They can donate to us so we can continue to support people and their pets. The resources required to run the free clinics, to provide the follow-up care and funding for emergency care is quite enormous. They can also support social service agencies that are servicing vulnerable populations, and they can advocate our government to make low-income housing a priority and to make it illegal for landlords to deny people housing because they have pets.
Mm-hmm. That's an important one for sure.
Yeah, so there is the typical resource funding support that's always needed to make sustainable change, though we need some changes in our government priorities and in law to better protect people and their pets.
Well, thank you so much, Kathy, for joining us on the show today to share some information with us about the issues faced by companion animals and their guardians living on the streets and your work to help them.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me and giving me the opportunity to share our work.
Well, it's very much our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
All right, so if you want to learn more about the Paws for Hope Animal Foundation or to make a donation, you can visit their website at pawsforhope.org, and we highly recommend that you do. They're doing some great work.
That's Paws, P-A-W-S, right?
Yes, P-A-W-S, pawsforhope.org.
Never pause for hope.
Right, exactly.
Always take action for
exactly.
hope.
Exactly. That was a great interview, Sinead. Thank you so much. So we have some news now, right?
News, yes. So, so there was some good news this week with some interesting side notes. So on Saturday, January the 14th, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey Circus officially announced that after 146 years, they will be shutting down permanently, with their last show taking place on May the 7th. So they attribute this decision to a steady decline in ticket sales, which they say became even more dramatic after their decision to phase elephants out of their show back in 2015. The circus has been criticized in recent years for its long history of animal welfare issues, including cruel training practices and the use of bull hooks, which are sharp, pointed instruments that trainers use to control elephants, and several premature deaths of baby elephants. In 2004, a young lion died after being left in a sweltering train without water. More recently, in 2014, the circus refused calls to retire a circus elephant after she was shot in the neck during a drive-by shooting, forcing her back on the road a year later. The circus has received more than 50 animal welfare citations from the USDA since 1993, and the USDA is not an organization that typically is known for caring about animals very much. Yes, so that's something. So as I say, among growing public concern, Ringling announced in 2015 that they would be phasing out their elephant shows, and the elephants performed their last show there early last year. But their retired elephants were sent to Florida's Center for Elephant Conservation, which is a deceptive name for the headquarters of the circus's breeding efforts, basically, and questionable training programs. They're not an accredited sanctuary. And while they claim to be a conservation center, none of these elephants will be released back into the wild. It's a breeding facility that exists to make money.
Yeah, exactly.
So the circus has continued to use other animals in its shows, including big cats. Tigers spend days at a time in tiny pens in parking lots with no enrichment or room to run. Cats, while they are solitary animals, they get packed several to a cage, resulting in frequent fights. Tigers can be seen covered in scars or even obese from lack of exercise. They get joint injuries and cracked paws from being forced to live on hard concrete every day. And so basically, animals in circuses typically experience environmental and physiological neglect and psychological abuse, and they're coerced to behave through dominance and fear-based techniques.
Yeah.
So while, you know, Ringling Brothers is one of the largest performing animal shows in the world, and after 146 years of animal abuse, their closure is something to be celebrated, but the fight for these animals is not over. So As we mentioned, the elephants are still suffering at Florida's so-called Center for Elephant Conservation, living in small concrete Florida enclosures. They still have bull hooks used on them. They're still being forcibly bred, even though none of their babies will be released into the wild. So it's really important that we keep the pressure on Ringling to retire the remaining animals into accredited sanctuaries rather than selling them off to other zoos or similar establishments.
Yeah, I know that the elephants are actually being used for some kind of research too, right? Cancer research? Because I guess elephants apparently rarely get cancer, so they're kind of doing experiments on their blood to see if there's some kind of genetic
something to do with how long they live. I remember reading about that. Yeah. That's why they rarely, I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Elise.
Yeah, so that's kind of sketchy too. I mean, they're living in pretty bad conditions. I did a little bit of research about it. They kind of live in these concrete enclosures. They don't really have natural social groups. They don't have a lot of mental stimulation. And so, yeah, obviously that's not a good scene. And, you know, it wouldn't be good if the other animals that Ringling currently has in their care went to facilities like that. They should go to sanctuaries. But I mean, you know, I do want to say that I think that, I mean, you know, we do definitely have to keep the pressure on, but this is such exciting news, and I feel like it's a major victory for animals. It's a major victory for activists. I mean, activists have been putting pressure on Ringling for decades, in various ways, you know, lawsuits and obviously writing a lot of letters, calling, picketing their shows.
And they admit that one of the reasons is because of animal activists.
Yeah,
the CEO, or I'm not sure who it was, but he said there's not any one reason, but it has to do with all of these reasons.
Yeah.
It's one of them.
And I think the declining attendance has to do with activists as well, right? Mm-hmm. Because people, activists have been raising awareness about how this circus
works.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it is very encouraging, even though, you know, like you said, the fight is not over. We have to keep the pressure on.
And SeaWorld's going
to
be next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
SeaWorld. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Let's hope so. So there are a couple of petitions circulating online pushing to have the animals retired to accredited sanctuaries. So we'll have those posted on our Facebook page if you want to check them out. Please do sign and share. Keep the pressure on because these animals have suffered enough.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you for that, Sinead. So moving on, my guest today, who we are lucky to have in the studio, is Javron Martel, Canada Outreach Coordinator for the U.S.-based nonprofit organization Vegan Outreach. They're currently on a cross-Canada outreach tour and are handing out vegan information booklets at colleges and universities in the Vancouver area for the next couple of weeks. So that is why we have her here today. So welcome to Animal Voices, Javron.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great. So I understand that this tour that you're doing, it's part of Vegan Outreach's Adopt a College program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's pretty much exactly what you just said. So we've got coordinators that are going to universities and colleges around Canada, and we are outreaching to students. Typically, a million students get hit at up to 1,000 schools per semester. So it's a really, really great program. And we also will go to concerts and festivals and anything that has a large group of people that's going to be potentially a receptive crowd to hit with veganism.
That's amazing. Yeah. So is the Lower Mainland the start of your tour, or did you start out east and move out this way?
Yeah. Well, my first semester started in Ontario. So I did Southern Ontario, then went into the States, back up into the prairies, did Manitoba and Saskatchewan, and then I ended with Alberta. And then this semester is the BC coast all the way to Prince Edward Island.
Oh, cool.
So it's a pretty, pretty crazy big tour, but it's really awesome to be able to hit that many people, and you get to see how receptive the students are right now and how receptive the public is in general about this information.
Right.
So.
How receptive are they? I volunteered to come out with you next week, and I haven't done this for a while at a university. I'm curious to see, are things changing? I love speaking with university-age students because I find them in general to be quite open into information. They're mm-hmm. there to learn. But how has it been for you? And how long have you been doing this for? Like, have you seen a change?
I started, this was like, I went vegan and I had to become an activist right away.
Wow.
So I became an activist right away, started doing a ton of outreaching. So I did it for about 3.5 years before starting with Vegan Outreach. And I just notice, I do think it has to do with our generation and just what's going on in society right now. People have this desire to want to learn and grow more.
Yeah.
And so there's so many different tactics on how you can approach people so that you have better conversations, more detailed conversations where you really like struck a chord with people.
Yeah.
So I find that's where my receptiveness comes in a lot better, is when you actually learn how to read people more.
Yeah.
And you're on their level.
Being
it's
able
not
to relate to people. That's yeah. what I always think is, like, try to find something in common with the person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like, someone just told me last week he couldn't give up cheese. I can't do it overnight, he said. He might be listening right now. And my response was, I didn't do it overnight. You don't have to.
Right.
Like, I didn't.
Yeah. I have so many of those stories. And that's ultimately our key message with Vegan Outreach. And this is why I love the organization so much, is we're all about being engaging and being inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So our point is not to attack anybody for the things that they might not be doing that aren't vegan right now, but it's to encourage them to keep going with the progressive changes to make the better shifts, right?
Right.
And to eventually be vegan.
Cool.
And understand that these animals want to live and they have that right. So
So you're not just handing out leaflets then, you're actually engaging people in conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool because we our main focus with Vegan Outreach is the leafleting tours. So in fall and spring we do the first semester and the second semester.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have tabling events. We do show students videos if they're interested. We have the virtual reality headsets, which is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And we're focusing a lot this year on doing humane education presentations around as well. So I do think that, yeah, it's a great numbers game to be able to get information out there as much as possible, but it's also really important to engage in those conversations opposed to just handing out without that engagement. Because when you have that engagement, people are more willing to have things stick in their heads where they're really wanting to learn more about it. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, a conversation can have such an impact on somebody, right?
And
it's a personal conversation. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the virtual reality headsets, what do those show? Like when you put one of those on, what do you see?
Well, I'm actually going to pick mine up today.
Oh yeah.
So I haven't actually like played around with it or anything yet, but it is, people probably have seen Mercy for Animals and PETA with them. It's just the virtual reality headsets. You put it on and ultimately you get to see the life of what it would be like as a pig in a gestation crate.
Right.
So like you're moving your hands out in front of you and you can see like it's the paws. It's not your hands. You're getting, you know, all these things, the testicles being ripped off. You're getting all these things that are happening to the pigs, but you're noticing it through the virtual reality.
Yeah.
So it just shows people a very different way about it.
Yeah.
And then obviously we give the information. Don't just give people the problems. I think giving people the solutions is very important.
Absolutely. So how do you find people respond to that? Does it seem to kind of make an impact?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a really big shift happening in our world with just students wanting to know more. And it honestly, I wouldn't even say it's an age thing. I think everybody's just wanting to know more.
Yeah.
So you talk to people about what's happening with the environment. Not a lot of people are aware of what's happening with the environment.
Right.
Not a lot of people are aware that there's over 500 ocean dead zones. We have so much destruction going on in our planet right now.
And animal agriculture is largely to blame for
that. That's the main cause, right? So we do focus on, or I find that I focus on the environment and health with the public. And then I always throw in the conversation about the animals. And it actually helps them make that big connection to understand that, wow, there's all this cruelty going on as well as this cruelty. And if you can live that happy and healthy life without harming others, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
So I've noticed that's a big thing. So talking to the public just about the nutrition facts and stuff.
That's what I think would be the biggest resistance. Is that what you're finding? And how does that conversation go?
Like the biggest resistance would be?
Like, well, I guess you're talking to people about issues. You're trying to present solutions. The ultimate solution, as an organization called Vegan Outreach would propose, is probably go vegan, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, but again, I can't do it overnight, you know. So what would be the factors that people bring up that I can't do it, or they're resistant, or they're not, maybe.
I honestly, this is so weird, but I actually haven't had somebody say those words, I can't do it, or I won't go vegan overnight. Like, I've had people say that they're interested, but like we were talking about the food prices or things, like they think that it's too expensive, or they're curious about it, but they're super worried about their protein issue or the iron and all this stuff. So I think that that's where the information comes in. And when you actually inform people the fact that, you know, if you're eating enough food, you're covered on your nutrient needs.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah,
it's not that big of a deal. And then that helps people.
I think it's always nice to show yourself as an example too. Like, I'm vegan and I'm not dead yet.
Yeah.
I don't have a protein deficiency. I always bring, and not only that, I know hundreds of other people in my position and who are also super fit and athletic and have a lot of muscle tone. They're not lacking in protein.
And I've been vegan for years, right?
Well, that's what I love about the booklets that we hand out too, because we have the Compassionate Athlete. It's probably one of my favorite ones to hand out because it's got David Carter on it, who's the 300-pound vegan.
Oh, yeah.
So he's blowing all these vegan wimpy myths out of the water. He's fantastic. And the public really takes to those books because they see like all these UFC fighters going vegan, all these, like, there's a lot of sports guys going vegan right now. And so we have a lot of that information in there. And so the guys see it, or the girls see it, whoever it is, and they are like, wow. We can be healthy and strong.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
Be vegan. This is great.
Busting stereotypes. Yeah, that's important. So, okay, so you have multiple different booklets that you hand out, or different leaflets,
right? Absolutely. So there's a fair bit of different ones. So we also have, like, the Guides to Cruelty-Free Eating, which I absolutely adore because I find that, again, it's the problem and the solution.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, we want to talk to people about what's happening, absolutely, but people get overwhelmed by that information, and sometimes it doesn't make them want to go home and research how to do it.
Yeah.
But if we're there to give them that information and we do it in a really captivating way where it intrigues them to go home and do more research, then that's the ultimate goal. So the Guides to Cruelty-Free Eating are really great because they have a ton of recipes.
Cool.
It breaks down all of your nutrition issues. it's pretty much a big, like, little food booklet. And nice. It's wonderful. It talks to students about where you can get vegan choices at restaurants around, or how to go about it when yeah. you're on a budget, or everything. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Vegan Outreach was co-founded by Jack Norris, who's a registered dietitian, yes. right? And have you met him? Do you work
yes.
with him?
Yeah, cool. He's fantastic.
Yeah. I actually, I love his website, veganhealth.org. I've mm-hmm. talked about it on the show a few times. It's like pretty much the ultimate vegan nutrition resource online. I find it so comprehensive.
And he's got a great book, too, if anybody wants to go buy Vegan for Life. It's absolutely amazing. Right. So yeah. it breaks down, again, all the nutrient problems and stuff like that that you'll need to know and how to go about it healthy.
Cool.
So.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
So what about your own vegan journey? So you were vegetarian for a while first, right? And then how long have you been vegan?
I was a vegetarian for 8 years before going vegan. Oh, okay. And I was one of those people that just felt better knowing that animals weren't dying for me, but I honestly didn't do any research.
Oh, okay.
So I started getting into spirituality type of stuff, and I started having these big shifts. And for some reason, something came in my head one day to Google veganism. And so I came across Gary Yourofsky's The Best Speech You'll Ever Hear.
Right.
And that was a huge turning point for me.
Wow.
So pretty much watched that video and then gave it all up from that point on, and then wow. became an activist right after. So it's been about 3.5 years now. So
nice. And you've been working with Vegan Outreach for how long?
I started with them in June, so it's been very recent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I was hoping you could tell us a little bit more about Vegan Outreach in general. I think it seems like the organization is focused on kind of the leafleting, right? Getting the information out and that kind of thing. But is these tours to colleges, is this kind of the main thing that Vegan Outreach does, or there's other programs?
It is the
well,
main so? Focus, yeah. Just because it covers the majority point of the year, just right. its first semester and second semester. But like I was saying before, we do the virtual reality headsets, which we do yeah. those in the summertime. You have so many festivals that come up via concerts or everything that's going on with like right. folk fests and things.
Yeah.
So there's so many opportunities for us to bring those out. And right. it's really captivating for the public, because in the summertime, they're more receptive to want to wear these headsets and stand outside in the warm because it's not freezing.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, too, we're doing the humane education presentations, and that's going to be starting a lot more as well. So getting bigger crowds of people together. I've also been asked, being on this tour, I've also been asked by a fair bit of activists to do like training sessions and just chat with people about how to go about making conversations more effective and how to generate more conversations while you're outreaching.
Right.
So I think that we're probably going to try and line some of those things up as well, just to get activists more comfortable actually being out there on the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So so on these tours, do you have a team that's with you, or are you kind of working solo at these colleges, or?
I'm a solo game.
Oh, okay.
On this tour, I'm solo right now, but then there are always activists and volunteers that I meet up depending on the school. Right. So sometimes I have nobody that can show up and help, and other times I have, like, my biggest one, I think, was 7.
Oh, okay.
So that was in Toronto, so it was really good. So great. It all depends.
And that's local people, right? You reach
yeah.
out to locals
yeah.
and they come and help. Yeah, cool. Yeah, so I guess so far in the Vancouver area, you just hit a couple of colleges, right? Because you kind of just got here a
yeah.
few days ago. But you said you went to SFU and Abbotsford.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and how did I guess I you know, when you said that, I was like, I don't think I even knew there was an SFU campus in Abbotsford. Is it a small campus?
Yeah, the Simon Fraser.
Yeah, because yeah. the main campus is in Burnaby, yeah. right? So
yeah, it was pretty small.
Right.
Really receptive students as well.
Okay,
you probably got them all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, well, and it was a gloomy day, so it was a lot of walking around inside. So you just gander around the hallways and hand out to whoever you can. And when the rain stopped yesterday, I kind of like hit outside and just tried to talk to the students that were waiting for the buses and things
good
like that.
Good for you for going, just even going out in that downpour yesterday.
Yeah.
It was pretty rainy.
I've done it numerous times. You kind of get, it comes with the territories. Right. And you always want to suck it up because you have these goals in your head that you're like, I want to reach this, so I'm not just going to cave, you know? Like,
yeah.
We're going. I don't care if it's snowing. I don't care if my fingers are going to fall off.
Right. Right. That's good. But so you found that at SFU, the students were pretty receptive? And
yeah,
good...
I had actually a really good conversation. I like to say this with a couple of people, but I had a great conversation with a couple girls yesterday who I think that they've had that unfortunate experience of being kind of attacked by I hate saying it, but like the quote unquote angry vegan.
Right.
And so I was brought up the information with them, just let them know like, hey guys, like we're just showing information here. We're not like most, you know, places, people that want to show the blood or gore guts. Like we try and show people what's happening in a very gentle way. Mm-hmm. So it started off a really great conversation with them. And they actually, who originally said that they had been pushed away from veganism, were really interested because of the approach of being more engaging and inclusive. Cool. So I had a really good experience with them yesterday. And I also got asked to do a speech next time I'm through, so
nice.
We'll be talking to some organizers and coordinators there and hopefully lining something up when I'm through next year.
Do they have like a, is it like a vegan vegetarian club that wanted you to do the speech, or it's just like the student
it was a student associate, like a student that approached me, and he was talking about doing it in like the International Global Lounge or something like that. I think just trying to do like a decently wide-ranged talk and bringing up what's happening to the animals and with the environment and health. So
that's fantastic.
Always trying to cover the three.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's all important. Yeah, that's really great. I mean, just on a more personal level, you know, just why do you think a vegan lifestyle is an important element in ending violence against animals?
Because veganism is nonviolence.
Yeah.
That is the whole message. It's extremely important because it's like we said before, you know, it's a social justice issue.
Yeah.
We need to make people aware of what's happening, and we need to bring justice to this world. This is, it's 2017. There's no reason for it. And yeah. I say it all the time, but truly, if you could live a happy and healthy life without harming others, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
These animals are beautiful living beings. They have the moral desire to live. They have central nervous systems, they feel pain, and they do not deserve to suffer for ultimately a chaste palate or for human entertainment or greed.
Right. So I think it's so important even just to have those discussions because people don't think about these things, right? And mm-hmm. and I bet you've had discussions with students who haven't ever really considered these mm-hmm. issues. Like, oh, they have feelings like I do.
Yeah.
Never thought
it's
about it.
It's kind of out of sight, out of mind a lot of the time.
Yeah. So. And so I started doing a lot of bearing witness this year at slaughterhouses around, and I don't capture anything of the footage going into the slaughterhouse, but just the animals that are arriving in the trucks. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if I show the students those pictures, it helps them make that connection because right. they don't think of it. They just think of the pretty little package that you buy in the grocery store. They don't mm-hmm. think about the fact that these animals had to be transported from days and days on end with no food or water in all weather extremes. Mm-hmm. They are scratched up. They're going crazy from captivation trying to escape. Yeah. So you show them the reality of this, and you show them like the eyes staring right at your soul. And I find that the students are really receptive to that, and it actually hits home with them more than if I was to show them a knife in a throat.
Yeah.
Because they instantly back away.
Right.
But if I show them the reality and like them as living beings and showing that they have that moral desire to live and that they do want to be around,
yeah.
It makes the public make the changes faster.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you can't deny that.
No, it's true. When you look in their eyes, you can relate to them. You know, you see an element of commonality for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's great. That's so important. So you've been doing that kind of work, you know, around Ottawa, or kind of have you managed to do it at other places in the country? Or?
Yeah, there's actually not a slaughterhouse in Ottawa, so I've done it a fair bit in Toronto with the groups that are started out there. And then I started my tour and wanted to get footage from other cities and post it to those groups so people in those cities could see what's going on in that direct city. So obviously, doing this on my own, you can definitely get into some pretty tough situations. So I have been chased off properties a few times. I've had semi-truck drivers approach me and yell at me. And again, I'm not going to stop because this is, at the end of the day, this is not about me. This is about the animals. And this is about getting as much information as we can out there so that people change.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but yeah, it's been a pretty crazy experience. And you see difference is with like how you're treated from the workers in different places, and you also see differences in the animals. And there's it's just a huge energy shift that I feel with the animals right now also, where it's when they see us, they're not necessarily scared of us anymore. It's almost like they've been like warned, or not warned, but like the animals that have passed away previously of like sending down this thing where they're like, people are fighting for you guys, like we're coming, like we're trying so hard, we're not going to give up.
Yeah.
But so you sense this different vibration with the animals in the slaughterhouse trucks recently. Like that's what I'm noticing in the past like couple months. It's been different than when I first started, which I am trying to stay really hopeful that that means that big changes are going to happen in our world, and that a lot of the public is going to wake up and make these changes to stop this animal suffering.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's fantastic. So you have quite a few more stops in the Lower Mainland, right? I guess the bunch is kind of in the Vancouver area because we have quite a few universities and colleges here, right? You're hitting UBC and Kwantlen and what else? Capilano, right?
Yeah, there's a fair bit. So we're actually around for another week, 2.5 weeks.
Oh, okay.
So we'll be doing a lot of schools. So we could probably link up some information. I do have the posts in a fair bit of the vegan activist groups in Vancouver. So if anybody's interested in joining, please.
Yeah, can we get that posted to our Facebook page? I know I saw it somewhere and I can't find it right now. So
yeah I'll do that later. And then that way, anybody that wants to come join, please do. We're always looking for more volunteers. And it's really great to get out
volunteer.
There.
Yeah.
Yay. We're going to have a great time on Thursday.
Thursday, UBC. Be there.
Cool. And you're going to the island as well, right?
Yeah. Vancouver, so that's the beginning of week next week. So doing Nanaimo as well. So anybody in Nanaimo that wants to join me, I've got no volunteers lined up there.
Right. I have one I can think of.
Okay, perfect.
A young vegan who I think she would be able to learn from you.
Cool. Perfect.
Cool. Good stuff. Well, yeah, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining us on
Animal
Voices today, Jevron.
It was great having you.
Yeah. So for our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about vegan outreach, visit veganoutreach.org. So you've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us here next Friday, January 27th. Jen will be hosting that show. My understanding is she'll be talking with Gary Charbonneau. Is that correct?
I don't know.
Okay. I thought she had
another plan. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not going to say what I think her other plan is if we don't know.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess we'll just have
to stay tuned in. What I think she had planned was actually quite exciting. It was going to be a debate.
Oh, great. Okay. Fantastic. Well, yeah, I'm sure there will be updates on our Facebook page once that gets solidified. So we here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website at animalvoices.org where you can stream past shows or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Animal Voices Vancouver, and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We're currently looking for volunteers to produce, co-host, operate the control room, help with website maintenance and social media, and more. If you have skills and interest in any of these areas, as well as a passion for animal advocacy, please do drop us an email, radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Training will be provided. So now we'll leave you with a song. Here's the legendary Jamaican British reggae artist Maka B singing about what he eats as a vegan. This is Wummy Eat. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Salamata. I tell and a vegan, we're vegan. I and I eat from the earth and need the animals to give birth. No deaders, no fur, no feathers. When I tell people I don't eat meat, fish or dairy, then look for me strangely. Then I realize I eat a very wide variety. Listen to Maka B. Yo, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell him, say me no eat no fish, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell him, say that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell him, say me no eat no fish, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell him, say that I'm a vegan. When me no eat no meat, no fish, no cheese, no egg. Nothing with no foot, no eye, no wing, no head. Nothing with no lip, no ears, no tongue, no leg. Prefer fruit and vegetables instead. Me careful and me choose about what I'm eating. Me medicine, me food is me medicine. When me tell people that me not eat them, they think. They look at me and scratch them chin and start wondering. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me not eat no fish, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me not eat no fish, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. You wanna hear what me eat? Yo, I eat calado, aki, sweet potato, yam, banana, and tomato, cabbage, spinach, avocado, chocho, butter, bean, and cocoa, courgette, millet, plantain, rice, and peas, and pumpkin, mango, dates, and guava, chickpeas, and cassava, Brussels sprouts, and cauliflower, onion, fennel, and cucumber, plum, pear, and papaya, aubergine, and saya, lime, lentils, and quinoa, oatmeal, bread, and oatmeal flour, watercress, and okra, tofu, and sweet pepper, couscous, and carrot, broccoli, and coconut, peaches,
apples, apricot, red fruit, jackfruit, sour sap, pistachios, cashews, and almonds, walnut, peanut, also pecan, sesame seeds, sunflower, lemon, orange, pineapple, and melon, mango, wheat, and garlic, kiwi, corn, and turnip, pacho, and pomegranate, hijiki, and rocket berries, cherries, and strawberries, beetroot, grapefruit, and celery. You see, the meat's not necessary. We tell them, say, how will me eat them? I wonder where me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How will me eat them? I wonder where me yam. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan, man. How will me eat them? I wonder where me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How will me eat them? I wonder where me yam. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan. Hey, look how me big, and me say, look how me strong. Some people can't believe that me a vegetarian. If you want a healthy body, check the real Rasta man. Cause Rasta man will tell you about the right nutrition. Me get me calcium, me sodium, me get potassium, me get me zinc, me get me iron, and me magnesium. Instead of yam, the fish me yam, what the fish yam? Like the kelp and Irish monster growing at the ocean. Me get me proteins and me minerals, me get me calories, the vitamins A, the B, the C, the D, the E, the F, the G. It sends up fatty acid like the omega 3. Me get me fiber and me carbohydrates in my body. Don't forget your water, drink a few glasses a day. The toxins in your body, just flush them away. Some of the things you eat, stop in your body and decay. When it come to food, I don't play. We tell them, say, I will me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How will me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan, man. How will me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How will me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan. A lot of people would have stopped eating the meat if they had to kill the animal before they could have eat. Look on the way the animal then get treat. Unsanitary condition where some of them keep it. We're supposed to eat the meat, we would have sharp teeth. You wouldn't need a knife and a fork, you know, see. You can't eat it raw, you have to cook it complete. And put on vegetable seasoning to make it taste sweet. How will me eat them? I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How will me eat them? I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan, man. How will me eat them? I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How will me eat them? I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. It's up to you, you can eat what you want to. You can be a vegetarian and be healthy too. There's a lot of choice around, many foods around you. But just remember, some more I forget to tell you. The nectarines and tangerines and clementines and guanabana, lychee oats and ginger, kale and spirulina, mung beans, warm your pasta.